Show your T-ball team spirit and buy your hard-working Art Lab team a cup of coffee, which helps fuel purchases of high-octane equipment and T-ball tech that get poured back into percolating, highly caffeinated content for you. Just go to buymeacoffee.com and search Therapy Bites.
On this episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, T-Ballers, welcome to another great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab. Our guest today is here to help you locate your best friend and develop a master plan to defeat your worst enemy. The good news is that both your best friend and your worst enemy are really easy to find, but the bad news is they're locked up in the same vault, and that vault is in your very own skull. Join us for a mind-expanding conversation with ICF certified, International Coaching Federation certified, Shanghai-based master coach Colin C. Thompson as we tackle the saboteur in the mirror, the psychology of self-improvement. Next up on Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Stay tuned following the interview for On the Couch and Off the Rocker. Our special guest's psychosilly analysis by Art Lab's own head cabbager, Dr. Ima Freudnacht.
Welcome to Therapy Bites Art Lab, where Dr. Heath and his special guests share real-life stories of helping and healing. Fresh from the actual therapy couch, while taking a bite out of common counseling missteps and misconceptions. And now, here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
Hey, T-Ballers, welcome to another episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab with Colin C. Thompson. On today's episode, the saboteur in the mirror, the psychology of self-improvement. Today, we're going to talk about the art of self-awareness and intelligent use of intelligence. Imagine that intelligence can be used negatively. The power of programming your brain for success, overcoming hurdles of self-sabotage, building powerful habits for a positive mindset, and Colin's own very special, the X Factor in performance improvement. Colin C. Thompson is the founder of his own company in Shanghai. It's a company focused on business consulting, coaching, and training. Colin has been consulting and coaching since 2016. He holds a certification from the International Coaching Federation. As a result of his coaching services, individuals, teams, and organizations have developed and enhanced their work and leadership skills essential for success both in personal and professional environments. We look forward to our episode today with Colin. And Colin, welcome to the show.
Stay in the stands at the end of the interview, T-Ballers, and witness our special guest slug a bite-sized brain ball with your name all over it, clean out of the Art Lab.
Tell us your story. What in the world are you doing in China, the COVID capital of the world, coaching on self-improvement and motivation?
So I'm trying to make sure that my mind is serving me. I often ask people, is your mind your best friend or is your mind your worst enemy? Now, as you mentioned, we are now in the official COVID capital of the world. So I've been taking a lot of mental fitness reps in my mental gym and a lot of mental fitness focus to maintain not just mine, but the communities here, our positive mindset.
I love that. Mental reps in your mental gym. I find that folks leave off one or the other. They either spend a lot of time with physical fitness. Sometimes they spend work on mental fitness and not physical fitness. But I've always thought that they both go together. You really can't have one without the other.
Yeah, and you hit the nail on the head, so to speak, because so many people focus on mental fitness. For example, if I asked you or Debbie or anybody, what is physical fitness? How would you define physical fitness, Debbie?
I would just define it as my body. In other words, biological, being strong, being fit, you know, doing cardio, working out, strengthening exercises, all external, you know, physically fit. Right. I don't think of the mental part of it when I think of physical fitness.
Exactly. You said being strong, being fit, working out, having strength. It's very much like if you had to run 1 mile and you never, ever trained to run 1 mile, that 1 mile let's start with the positive side. If you're in good physical fitness, that 1 mile might not be too tough. May take you 8 minutes, 9 minutes, but you're running, you don't have any worries, you get finished, and you're proud of yourself. If you have poor physical fitness, that same mile that you conquered in high physical fitness, in poor physical fitness, that same mile or half mile can hurt. Your legs get heavy at half mile, your chest starts breathing heavy, and perhaps to finish that mile when you're in poor physical fitness, you have to walk, right? It's the same thing with our mental fitness. As Dr. He said, most people don't put those together. You mentioned also, and mental fitness is nothing more than our ability to maintain a positive mindset while going through this wonderful, crazy, happy, interesting thing called life. And just as you build up your physical fitness by going to the gym, you build up your mental fitness over time also by building up your muscles and your mental fitness. Excuse me.
You know, Colin, I want to point out there something that you said that really just dawned on me. I'm already having a new revelation this morning based on a conversation. I used to compete in bodybuilding contests and strongman contests, but strongman contests are a bit of a different kind of animal than just going in the gym. If you go in the gym, everything in the gym is literally made for easy lifting. Things have handles on it. You know exactly where to put your hands. There's these things called knurlings, which is the imprint on the bar to help you get a better grip. Everything is kind of engineered to facilitate ease of lifting heavy stuff. Now, let's contrast that with a strongman contest where nothing is engineered for easy lifting. It doesn't have handles on it. It may have no handles at all. There's a big thing called a hustleful stone, which looks like a big tombstone. There's the Atlas. I think it weighs 270 pounds. There's Atlas stones, five of those, and they weigh different things, and it's just a big round stone. My point is the strongman contest is more like life. In life, things aren't really made for easy lifting, but I love what you said there because if I'm understanding correctly, the more you focus on mental fitness, you can lift heavier things in life, and you can lift things in life that are just difficult to lift. They're not made for easy lifting, but you can lift it anyway because you've worked on this mental fitness. I found that people expect even heavy things in life to be easy to lift. And when they're not easy to lift, it just kind of throws them out of whack. You know, they don't know what to do with it. They catastrophize it, and they I don't know. I think you're right. I think that we have to move into life with intention to be able to lift things that are heavy. And how do you teach people to do that?
Yeah, well, the first part is going back to what you mentioned. You talked about going to the gym and how the weights there are made for easy lifting, and then the strongman contest, how they're not. Well, I guarantee you, I assume, before you really were able to go into the strongman contest, you first started in the gym learning how to lift, learning how to get stronger. And once you had a higher level of strength, you were then ready for the strongman contest. The exact same mental fitness. And the beautiful thing about improving and building your mental fitness, the gym is everywhere. From the moment you wake up in the morning, open your eyes, you're in, right?
Yes, that's so, true. So,
yeah. It's a universal gym.
Right. Yeah. It's a universal gym. And some things have the knurlings on them, some things don't, right? But as you mentioned, the main thing is knowing you're there and using things you experience to really start building up your mental fitness. So if we establish that to build your mental fitness up, it takes doing these small reps over time. For example, when you go to the gym the first day, you may not be able to curl 25 pounds. Maybe it's only 5 pounds, which is great. You have a baseline. Mental fitness is the same thing. So we have these things called pet peeves.
And, you know, I think my wife has a whole collection of those.
Pet peeves, this is the best way to start. So I made the mistake years ago of trying to handle something that was too heavy for me to really maintain a positive mindset. And I had to give up on that and start with a lighter rep. And I'll tell you what I did. I'm not sure if you guys have kids, but years ago, my son was 2 years old. And I don't know what happens when a baby, when a nice, innocent baby turns two, they change. Every night, every single night, okay, every single night, my son and I would go to war for 90 minutes. We call this his nightly go-to-bed routine. After the shower, we take him out, get him dressed, put him into bed, and it seemed like he did not fall asleep. And by the end of that 90 minutes, as he's getting, I would say, more sleepy, I'm getting much, much more upset because I don't understand why he can't go to sleep. So I would leave there every night having yelled at him. And you can't yell at a kid to go to sleep. It doesn't work. Having yelled at him and really be amped up, really be triggered. So I said, this is not where I can start because I can't do this yet. So I went to something else. In my house, for whatever reason, when my wife leaves the microwave door open, it drives me crazy. It used to drive me crazy. Because the light comes on, and I say, why can't she just close the door?
So that was awful. Why would anyone do that?
But that was something that I can manage. And, you know, we all have pet peeves, and some don't make sense. It's what we have. But for me, seeing the light on the microwave meant that we were wasting energy and wasting money. So I would slam the door. I'd make sure she knew that I was upset. And then I noticed something. Her pet peeve with me was leaving a wet towel on the bed. I would do it, not even recognize it. And I said,
wait
a second.
That's terrible.
Oh, my gosh, Colin, that's awful.
A wet towel on the bed? What are you thinking?
Everybody has a thing that really gets them going, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
When I put the towel on the bed, it's only because when I dry off, I drop and I get dressed and I forget about it. I'm not doing it on purpose. I'm not doing it to get her upset. So I said, let me put that same mindset into the microwave. So I said, okay, right. I know when I see the microwave door, it usually triggers me. Let me be mindful I'm being triggered, okay? How can I not make my wife upset by my action? How can I take a different action? And that action was, here it is, walk up to the microwave, close it quietly, and get on my business. And I did that for about 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 days, and I noticed something. The microwave door is closed now. And after I worked on that and a few other pet peeves, I got stronger and stronger and stronger. And now the best time of my day, in all seriousness, is putting my son to sleep at night. Now, he's older now, right? But I was able to use my newfound mental fitness muscles and put on something heavier and maintain a positive mindset as I was going through what used to trigger me.
I love that you're labeling this mental fitness because I'm always looking for newer and better terms to explain these concepts to people. We call it in the art lab, and for those new out there to the show, it's accurate realistic thinking, ART, life-affirming beliefs, LAB, the art lab. We do these experiments on ourselves and with our clients and patients. But we call it cognitive restructuring, and I want to point out something to our listeners. A couple of things actually that I just find so valuable in what Colin's talking about is notice that he said, now the microwave door is shut. What I want to point out is the microwave door is shut whether his wife starts shutting it or whether he shuts it. The end result is the problem is solved. Do you know in our world, and I know this is going to be really weird, especially for the folks in the U.S. to understand, because in the U.S., and I love the U.S., but here's a big problem in the U.S. It may be a big problem in China, too. We get a lot of reps with our index finger pointing at other people. It's your fault. It's your fault. It's their fault. It's the Democrats' fault. It's the Republicans' fault. It's the liberals' fault. It's the conservatives' fault. The main body part we do the most repetitions with is our index finger pointing out the blame on other people. But there are some cultures that they don't do that, that they just solve the freaking problem. And if there's something that I would recommend that people practice in this new year 2023 is just experiment, folks. Just experiment with not pointing a finger at somebody and just focus on solving the problem. Focus on the solution for the problem, and you'll be amazed at how that changes your life. The microwave door gets shut no matter who does it, The clothes get picked up no matter who does it. The wet towel gets picked up no matter who does it. Now, the other thing that Colin said I want to point out is what I call the leg lamp effect. Those of you that are familiar with the Christmas story, and the old man, as he's called in the show, says to his wife, "You used up all the tape on purpose." And that's called mind reading and catastrophizing, yes. which I'm an expert at that. Not really. No one's expert at that. But when you tell yourself that someone does it on purpose, that you mind read as if you have some type of psychic ability, that they intended to do this to make life harder on you, neurologically, understand what you're doing. Now, you're free to do this. You're welcome to do this. I'm a big free will guy. I'm just saying you don't have to. You're actually telling your brain that the open microwave is a threat to you in some way. I don't know, maybe the rays are going to get out and give you brain cancer or something that if the door's not closed. But you're telling yourself that this is a threat to you. I had a social media debate just last night where a post I made, a person came on and said, "Your post made me anxious." Now, think about that for a second or two or three. As I said to them, you're telling me that my words, which are literally pixels in a pattern on a page, reached inside the vault of your skull and did something to your brain cells you didn't like. How do I have the power to do that? And the microwave door open doesn't have the power to do that. The wet towel on the bed doesn't have the power to do that. For me, some of you know me, somebody not washing their hands or crawling around in the floor with their hands, and I have all kinds of catastrophizing thoughts about that, doesn't have the power to do that. I'm doing that to myself, and I think this is what Colin's going to share with us today about mental fitness and mindset. Does some of those fit in, Colin, with what you're teaching people, what we call?
Yeah. So, Dr. Hugh, actually, absolutely. I want to start out with all of those things that you mentioned don't have the power to hijack your brain. They do, and that's a challenge. But if you build up a mental fitness, they no longer have that power. You'd be surprised how some little minute things can really trigger us. So the goal here is to take the power away. And I want to talk about something you mentioned, the finger pointing. And one of the first steps in trying to improve your mental fitness is to really understand what's pulling you down, or what's tripping you. And we have a number of saboteurs which we'll get into, but the master saboteur, the king saboteur that really gives us our negative emotions, a lot of our negative emotions, is judgment. And typically, the first person we judge is ourselves, saying, "You're not fast enough, you're not smart enough, you made another mistake again, you dummy, how can you do this, don't try to do that, you'll fail." It's typically we judge in three areas. Judging ourselves first, and typically if we judge ourselves a lot, it means we also judge other people. That's the second area, judging ourselves and judging other people. Or this person doesn't know what they're doing, why they make that mistake again, they're silly, they're stupid, they're too big, they're too small. Judging ourselves, judging other people, and then, as you touched on this one, the third one, judging the environment. Oh, the Democrats get in office, the country's done. The Republicans get in office, the country's done, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Judging the environment. So judging ourselves, judging other people, and the environment. All we have to do is we have to have with ourselves honest discernment. Okay? You made a mistake. Learn from it. Move on. No judgment. Other people, we have no idea what's going on in their lives, making them act this way. So we have to try not to have judgment for them, but have empathy for them, because we don't know what's going on. And the environment, we have to say, what? I can't control the environment. So I need to not let the environment control me. So the first thing to do is understand how your judge is really trying to manipulate you and lead you down that negative emotion, negative mindset path.
And by the way, I often wonder, you're talking about if the Democrats get in the office, the country will be ruined. If the Republicans get in the office, the country will be ruined. I've decided that we need a new political party, and I'm hoping that somebody listening will start this. It's called the Fifth Grader Party, because I want to vote for a fifth grader. I think that the fifth graders would do a much better job than either the Republicans or the Democrats. You've heard, are you smarter than a fifth grader?
Yes.
Evidently, neither the Republicans nor the Democrats are smarter than a fifth grader. I don't know about you, but I'm going to write in my favorite fifth grader for office next election term. I'm sorry about that. That just came to my mind.
The Twilight Zone came back years ago, and that episode of New Twilight Zone about a 10-year-old kid being made president.
Oh, that's awesome. Cool. I think we should give it a shot. How much worse could it really get?
It was interesting.
If we had fifth graders running every country in the world, I think there'd be less war, more peace, and more people would get fed, and maybe we'd be fed nerds on a rope for supper, but at least we'd have our supper. Okay. Well, what are some things that kind of got you into this coaching career, Kyle, and what is it that led you to think, hey, man, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to move to China and start coaching people on self-improvement and success?
So those two things really were not connected. I always, not always, but for a long time, for much of my years, I grew up being highly motivated. And in doing that, trying to motivate others. I'm by birth, I'm Canadian. So when we moved to the United States, we didn't have the PTSD a lot of African Americans have. That's post-traumatic slavery disorder. We grew up in an environment being told that we can't. However, in the U.S., a lot of African Americans are told from a young age they can't. So when I would see this, I would always tell folks, yes, you can. In my household, my mother would beat me if I tell her I can't do something. So, yes, you can. So it started young, high school, college, always trying to tell people, yes, you can. Now, fast forward to 2006, I had an opportunity to join IBM. And the sole reason I joined IBM was because they told me that they more than likely can give me some experience abroad. And I really want to get to learn other cultures, not cultures in the U.S., but go out and really learn that culture. So people ask me, Colin, how did you pick China? Well, my manager said, Colin, China. I said, okay.
Just that quick. Huh?
Mm-hmm. There you go.
You didn't flip a coin or anything. You just said, let's go.
And then fast forward another, I'm going to say, 8 years. Internally with IBM, they asked me to start coaching our leaders, especially ones coming from abroad, coming to China, to help them adapt to the environment. Now, my first thing was, I heard of life coaching. I don't believe in it. I'll do it, though. If you think I have a talent for it, I'll do it on top of my regular work. Aha moment, light bulb, whatever you want to call it, instantly. Because with motivation, and Sarah, let me tell you something. Sarah, mm-hmm. Give me 10 minutes with you, I can motivate you. I can motivate you, and you will be motivated that you wouldn't believe. However, by Friday, maybe not so much. By Monday, forget it, right? We're right back to regular mindset. But I found with coaching, and where you stay with the client and help them reach their goal, it's not about motivation. It's about momentum, but inspiration, helping them realize the golden why they're trying to improve their lives. So to me, coaching, motivation, there was this perfect marriage. And in 2018, I was fortunate enough to be able to open my own boutique coaching company here in Shanghai. And it's been a very fulfilling experience, especially due to COVID, but very fulfilling experience.
Wow. You know, that reminds me, what you just said reminds me of that quote, and I'm sure everybody listening has heard this quote, but if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. If you teach him how to fish, he'll eat for the rest of his life. So it sounds like you go for more of the approach of, I'm going to teach these people the skills they need to continue this in their life, rather than, well, here you go, and then let them, you know, just continue on and kind of go back down to where they were.
Absolutely. I was getting tired of giving the same people motivations. Comments, right? I said, golly, man, when are you going to be able to inspire yourself to reach a better height? So I found coaching really does do that.
And you know, that's one thing that I find is a problem in our field of psychology and psychotherapy is we're just feeding people for that session. And come back if you want to get fed, come back for the next session. And people really develop a dependency on psychotherapy. And there are people in psychoanalysis for decades. Can you imagine? Decades. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the best things that clinicians can do is work themselves out of a job. It's nice to be needed, but we're here to work ourselves out of a job. I think a great coach is there to work themselves out of a job. Do you find yourself doing that with your clients? Is it you work yourself out of a job, and sooner or later they're out there flying on their own?
Yeah, well, one of the differences between, I guess, therapy, I don't know much about therapy, but therapy and coaching is, in coaching, one of the first things we talk to our clients about is, what is that goal you want to achieve? And once we work with them, through them achieving that goal or being on the road to achieve it, we're finished. Uh-huh. We're finished. Our contract is finished, unless they want to sign up for a different goal. But we always focus on one single goal with our clients. It may take 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, especially if it's a career-based goal, career change. They take longer, right? But you want to try to, the best scenario is to stick with your clients until they reach their goal. And once they reach their goal, typically we part ways. Hopefully I get some referrals and they can come back and have another goal they want to achieve.
So Colin, what is the main thing that you bring to the table that's different than other coaches when it comes to motivation and self-improvement? What is it that you bring that others don't?
I don't think I bring something that others don't. That's okay. The wonderful thing about coaches. A lot of coaches really want to do one thing, help people improve their lives. Mm-hmm. That's it. And there are so many different techniques to do that. So I tell people, if you feel it's going to help you, get coaching. I don't care who your coach is. Get a coach. Now, I think one of the things that makes me a good coach is I'm very aware of the saboteurs that people have that prevent them from reaching their goals. And we talked about this before, and the saboteurs are little versions of you sitting on your shoulder telling you lies. You can't do this, and there are many different saboteurs. And Debbie, I have in front of me the results of your saboteur assessment.
Ah.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And you know, getting back to your question, I think last year when I started focusing more on mental fitness, understanding people's saboteurs helped them to say, yeah, I do understand that a little bit. For example, are you okay to talk about your results?
Absolutely.
I would agree that that we should all observe Debbie being stripped psychologically naked.
Yes, with my
squirrelzilla. On this episode of Therapy by Heart Lab.
Yes, I think that's great. Absolutely, 100%, Colin.
Okay, great. And our saboteurs, again, these are little versions of you that tell you lies. And we have the master judge. We also have 9 other key saboteurs. I won't go over all 9, but as far as the results, I'll talk to you about maybe a top 2 or 3.
Okay.
There's a saboteur called hypervigilant. And let me first say that all of these saboteurs come from a very positive place. What happens, though, is we lean too far into it. So, for example, hypervigilant, people who have the saboteur in them, again, you're not hypervigilant. You have the saboteur in you because it's separate. You have hypervigilant in you tend to worry about bad outcomes, perhaps worrying to the point where you're frozen, a lot of anxiety. You're worried that something negative is going to happen, and you must prepare yourself for that. Does any of that resonate?
Yes, all of it. It does. It does.
Yeah. Absolutely. But it originates from a very positive place, really wanting to be ready in case something goes wrong, right? So again, it starts in a positive place. So you mentioned that it does resonate. What resonates with you about the hypervigilant, if you don't mind sharing an example?
No, that's true. Probably, I think some perfectionism goes along with it, wanting to get things right the first time. Like you said, just worrying about things, wanting everything to be right, not wanting anything to go wrong. Of course, my hypervigilance also goes into other things, you know, with PTSD. So it's there with that too, but I've worked on that a lot. I've worked on that an awful lot. But I think what you said, you know, worrying about things, getting things right the first time is a big one.
How about going a little bit deeper, mm-hmm. and realizing that what's behind that is telling yourself what's going to happen if it doesn't go right.
Yes.
Catastrophe. What's the catastrophe that's going to happen if I don't get it right the first time?
Mm-hmm.
Because as I hear Debbie say that, I think, well, I kind of plan on it not being right the first time.
For full show notes and transcript of today's episode, go to therapybites.podbean.com.
The Therapy Bites podcast is HIPAA compliant. No identifying patient information will be disclosed by Therapy Bites podcast hosts or Therapy Bites podcast guests without permission from patients or guardians. All personal stories are de-identified in order to comply with HIPAA, the NASW Code of Ethics, and the Ethical Principles of Psychologists and Code of Conduct. Fresh from the therapy couch and from the deep dark recesses, stories may involve exploding preconceived notions and topics uncomfortable to underthinkers and small farm animals. Audience discretion and duct taping your head for safety is advised. Concrete-headed Kool-Aid drinking humans assume all risks associated with any possibility of choking to death on the accurate, realistic thoughts presented in the Art Lab. This is natural selection, and Therapy Bites podcast management and hosts are not responsible.
Welcome to this episode from the Therapy Couch, where we share stories of hurting, helping, and healing. Real-life stories from real-life humans, hoping their messes may be a message you can use to improve your own lives and possibly maneuver around the mistakes they made. You know, folks often share lots of metaphors with me about their experience of depression. And one is, I'm drowning. They say, I feel like I'm drowning. Now listen up. This is a cognitive distortion called catastrophizing and underthinking. Many times cognitive distortions come in pairs or triplets or quadruplets. And this particular cognitive distortion of underthinking, that is ignoring important aspects of the situation, is if you've ever drowned or spoken to someone who's actually drowned, you'll know there's nothing like drowning other than actually, well, drowning. Folks, when you tell your brain you're drowning, your brain ruffles through the Rolodex of all your experiences and horrific Hollywood movie scenes that you've been exposed to, drawing from those and recreating that pseudo-reality in your brain. Now, this activates an alarm response within the brain that is simply out of place and is going to make matters worse, because depression is difficult, but depression is not drowning. It's best to be concrete, asking yourself, what's that metaphor there for, and considering how accurate and realistic that thought really is or is not. Depression is difficult, but you cannot drown from it.
You're listening to Therapy Bites Art Lab, bite-sized therapy for your brain with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball Team. The best advice on the net. No copay required.
You're slipping beneath the cushions of your bobble-headed psychotherapist's couch, leaving behind empty, echoing, cushy, comforting, pseudo-psychological claptrap, moving into a deeper dimension of your own mind, where distorted thinking, hurting, hopelessness, and regret evaporate into clarity, healing, renewed hope, and newfound resilience. That's the podcast sign up ahead. Your next stop, Therapy Bites Psych Secrets.
Hey, T-Balders, welcome back to another episode of Psych Secrets. We'll get right back to your episode in a moment. How to diffuse, quote, F-word Lord here, how to diffuse feeling pressured. I'm being pressured. It's too much pressure. You're pressuring me. You ever get used to using these huckleberries as sabotaging thinking, telling yourself you're being pressured? You're handing the remote control of your brain over to external people, places, and things. Someone sharing information with you is only pressure if you decide to think of it that way. You could decide to think of it just as information, or even just sound waves riding upon air set in motion. Doc Ethan, psychotherapy duck, says quack, quack to all the thinking that things are pressuring you. Does the decibel level of your lawnmower pressure you? Does the sound of rain pressure you? Then why would sound waves of words from another's mouth pressure you? Quack, quack on that nonsense. Be careful of the way you are allowing yourself to think of those decibels as it is your own thinking adding pressure and not the presence of air coming from the lungs of another person. Back to the episode.
Once again, Doc Heath rips the cushions from the couch, dishes the dirt, lets the cat out of the bag, uncorks the bottle, letting the genie escape, and blows the lid off of another of the universe's psych secrets.
Live the art life. Become a T-Ball Teammate Inner Circle supporter on Patreon at patreon.com/therapybites.
Here's Heath and the T-Ball team.
And I view that as a wonderful thing because the second time around, I get it more right. And the third time around, I get it more right. Mm-hmm. And to me, life is kind of a whittling project. You don't whittle what you're whittling. You know, whittle with a knife piece of wood. You don't whittle what you whittle. Mm-hmm. How's the best way to get through life? A whittle at a time.
A whittle at a time. I like that.
And when you're whittling, you don't carve a little doggy with one stroke of the knife. You whittle away a little at a time. Mm-hmm. And I view it as a sculpting, a whittling process. To me, there's no catastrophe.
That's cool.
But to Debbie, right. She mm-hmm. may be saying, and Debbie, correct me, I'm not a good mind reader, that if I don't get it right the first time, somebody's going to slap me upside the head with a rubber hose or something.
Right.
Well, hold one moment because I want to go deeper in here. Mm-hmm. So Debbie, I'm going to read to you, hypervigilant, continuous intense anxiety about all the dangers and a strong focus on what could go wrong. Vigilance that can never rest. Now, here's how we go deeper. You mentioned getting things right the first time, mm-hmm. or getting things right. Your second highest saboteur is what we call the stickler.
Mm. That goes together, doesn't it?
Yeah, and stickler, I read perfectionism and a need for order and organization taken too far. So sometimes when you have this saboteur in you and also the hypervigilant, you say, I must get this right because if something goes wrong, I kept wanting to deal with the outcome of that. So these two taken together are very powerful.
Mm-hmm. No, you're spot on. You're spot on. And, you know, to go deeper, it has a lot to do with consequences. You know, being concerned about what the consequences are going to be if I don't get it right. And I love that analogy that Doc Heath gave about whittling, you know, about mistakes are just part of life and part of, you know, whittling it out. It's just, it's good.
And by the way, I'm a big movie buff. Imagine watching your favorite movie and the protagonist gets it right the first time every time.
Boring.
It would be
well,
very
that's
boring.
Not your favorite movie at all. That no. sucks as a movie. there's a thing called Kill Your Darlings in writing where you find your favorite characters and you do something terribly tragic to them. Mm-hmm. And that's what, if your protagonist never suffers, if they get it right the first time, it would be boring.
That's true.
I look at things, the whittling a little at a time. Now, do I like it when things don't go right the first time? See, I didn't say I liked it. I just find value in it.
Yeah.
And to me, it makes a great story. Mm-hmm. I have some of the best stories of things not going right the first, second, third, fourth, or fifth time that I would never give up. But see, my perception of not getting it right is far different than Debbie's. What do you think is the biggest difference for you, Debbie?
In perception?
Yeah.
Oh, I think the biggest difference in perception for me is taking a negative, catastrophic, you know, view of it. If I don't get it right the first time, there's going to be some kind of negative consequence. There's going to be some kind of price to pay. And I want to work on changing that.
And Colin, that I'm glad David said that because help us, tell us what to do. We're just at our wits end here. We don't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. There we go.
So I'll tell you what to do. I just want to touch on this last one. The last one that you rank kind of highest is also being a pleaser. Being a pleaser.
You and I'll don't read say.
No, not me.
No. Not Debbie.
Nah. Dang.
It's to gain acceptance and affection by helping, pleasing, rescuing, or flattering others. However, lose the sight of own needs and may become resentful down the road. So do you resonate with anything about being a pleaser?
No. Yes. Oh, yeah. Because it goes with the other two. It goes with the other two. I can see where all three of them, you know, go together.
Yeah. And they all have, you know, all nine have different relationships with each other. Mm-hmm. Different, it's like, right? You add a cup of this or a little bit of this one, it has a different result. But going back to Dr. Heath's question, what can you guys do?
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Heath has done the first part. It's learning more about your saboteurs, because before we can battle something or somebody, we have to learn more about them. So there's three main activities. The first one we call the saboteur interceptor. So this is when you recognize I'm being saboteured again. My saboteur is trying to talk me into something. So Sarah, let me ask you this. If you put your hand on a hot stove, what do you do?
Ah! Pull it off.
Hopefully pull it off first. Then
yeah, true.
What a lot of people do is they leave their hand on a warm stove, and a warm stove is giving them negative emotions, but they don't pick it up. What we're trying to tell people to do, imagine negative emotion being a hot stove. So when you're being saboteured, right? Ah, alarm, take my hand off the hot stove. I'm being saboteured. So the first step is recognizing when you're being triggered. And I think if you use the hot stove example, because if you say you're being triggered, okay, I'm being triggered again, okay, let me take a different action. Now, taking different action is not easy until you built your mental fitness. So the first thing you say is just be aware that you're being triggered. So Debbie, what's one example of one thing that triggers you in doesn't have to be a saboteur, but what's something that triggers you, or like a pet peeve, something that you know, okay, I'm being triggered again, I'm going down a negative slope, so to speak.
Wow. See, I get put on the spot and I go blank.
It could be.
This could get cut out.
Well, what about the thought that we talked about earlier that Debbie, I think Debbie goes into many situations thinking that I've got to get this right the first time, that if this person is not happy with me, that's a bit of a catastrophe. Now let me not be hypocritical here. Do I prefer people to be pleased with me? But it's just not the most important thing. I also prefer honey buns over protein shakes, but honey buns just aren't the most important things. And I think Debbie may tell herself that the most important thing here is somebody else being pleased with me.
Yeah, true.
I think if I was going to pick one out for her, I would say one of her greatest saboteurs or triggers is actually her thoughts.
Yeah.
That if another human being is in any way put out with me, that's a catastrophe. Now, me, on the other hand, now this is going to sound awful because I did say I prefer people to be pleased with me, but sometimes not. If I'm in a debate, I shouldn't give this secret away. If I'm in a debate, one of the first things I'm going to do to put you off balance is to make you not pleased with me, because I know that if you can focus your energy on and your thought process on me, you're going to screw up your argument. And then I've got you. All I got to do is tick you off. And I'll do that on purpose so that I can win the debate. But see, Debbie thinks that it's essential that everybody in the world, all 8 billion people, be pleased with her. And if they're not, would you say, I don't know, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Is that accurate?
I would say at one time that was 100% accurate. I think maybe now it's only maybe 2 million people.
Are you sure? That's a big reduction.
That's a big reduction.
Only 2 million.
Huh? Only 2 million. Because I do have a better understanding now that it's impossible to please everybody. Mm-hmm. It's impossible. Yeah. You can't.
Right.
It's just not, it's not practical. So there is an improvement.
If I have a choice in helping you, a choice in actually helping you, or you being pleased with me, I'll choose helping you every day of the week.
Yes.
You don't have to be pleased with me, because my win is that I've done something to give you something to think about, to help you be safer. Hey, put your seatbelt on, to help you not get sick, keep your fingers out of your nose, that kind of stuff.
So Dr. Heath, are you okay to talk about your results as well, really quickly?
Man, I don't know. That's pretty personal. But let's go for it. Yeah.
Oh, the reason I say that,
yeah, strip me down, man.
I'm not going to do that. But you really have to say that because your comments here sort of fit into some of these here. So, for example,
The
first one is hyper-rational, right? Hyper-rational, intense and exclusive focus on the rational processing of everything, including relationships. Sometimes can be perceived as cold, distant, and intellectually arrogant. Again, not saying all of these things match. But hyper-rational, I'll give an example
judgmental.
Of somebody. I'll give an example of somebody who's hyper-rational. So let's say, for example, Sarah said to you, you know, I think I really twisted my ankle. It really hurts. You may say, Sarah, I think you should get into your car, go to the doctor. Here's how you get there. Go down to Main Street, turn left, go one more block, and go get it checked out. That's what I recommend. Hyper-rational. But hyper-rational will never say, how do you feel? How does it hurt? Right? They're more focused on the outcome. As you mentioned before, I'd rather you be mad at me, but I fix you. Right? Yeah. So more focused on the outcome.
Focus on fix the problem.
Right, right.
Happy, sad, mad, glad, man, who cares? Fix the problem.
So all about the man.
Your house is burning down. Who cares how you feel? Put out the freaking fire.
Yeah. Right, right. And David, I want to get back to you. We talked about those three steps, but one last thing with Dr. Heath. The second highest one is the controller. And with controller is anxiety-based need to take charge and control situations, bending people's actions to one's own will. Sometimes results in high anxiety and impatience when that's not possible.
Now, I'd like my response to that, because this is really what we teach people in the art lab, is that I would agree that I probably have some anxiety associated with that, but my behaviors don't come from my anxiety, but they come from my thought process. And my thought process is, let's just take the germophobia thing, since I know about infection control, it's my responsibility to call your attention to it so you won't get sick, which you're welcome to get sick if you'd like. But I'm going to share this information. At least then you've got something to do with it. I believe about myself, it is uncaring and discourteous and selfish to not share information I have that could help you not get sick. And remember, I have a very high sense of urgency to do that.
Yeah. All these saboteurs come from a very positive place. Very positive place. The need to help. But also some type of controller is the need to help, because if I don't help the person, nobody else will.
Yeah.
So perhaps feel my sense of responsibility. Right.
I say that all the time. I tell people, I tell Debbie and Sarah, I'm here to comfort the afflicted and to afflict the comfortable. I'm here to tell you stuff that no one else will tell you, because, well, they want you to be pleased with them. Now, is it nice for you to be pleased with me? Yeah, that's okay. It's just not essential.
Right. Right. Again, that's some of the characteristics of hyper-rational. And all of these things come from a good place. So I just want to go over the three steps. The question was, what do we do? The first one is recognizing, being mindful of when we're being triggered. Okay? I feel like I'm being triggered again. Let me be mindful of it. Don't try to change your behavior yet. If you're driving down the street, somebody cuts you off in your car, you know, still yell, blow your horn, whatever, but just say, okay, I did it again. And after a while, you recognize you're doing it again, you recognize a pattern, then you can start taking a different action. And part of the action is going to what we call the sage mindset. And the sage mindset is that everything we experience in life can be turned into a gift and opportunity. The challenging part, though, is finding out what is that gift and opportunity. And when you're being triggered, don't try to find an opportunity or gift, right? Let that die down and reflect on it. Reflect on it. Now, I'll give you an example. You guys are in the United States, you may recognize this. Mothers against drunk driving. Back in the 80s, 70s or 80s, a drunk driver killed this little girl. The mother was distraught. That's a terrible situation. You can find no happiness from that, no gift opportunity. What she did years later was form this organization to help keep drunk drivers off the street. And now she saved, that organization has saved I don't know how many lives. So having the stage mindset is, what can I take from this scenario situation that's going to be positive? It's very hard to do initially. But if you keep looking for the bright spot, soon it becomes automatic. And sometimes if you know you're going to go into a difficult conversation with a coworker or somebody, and you say to yourself, okay, here's my challenge. When I go in here, I'm not going to get triggered, and I'm going to actually find a gift in our conversation. Something I can say to that person or they say to me to make each of us feel better. That's the second part. And a final part, which is probably the most difficult action, is really to understand self-command. And self-command is saying, okay, I'm being triggered. Now I'm going to take a different response. And the response should be positive. So three steps: saboteur interceptor, developing the sage mindset, and then self-command. Whereas the microwave door being open would get me upset, I'm being triggered. Let me not do anything. How can I make this to a gift? Let me close the door. And then my self-command says, Colin, leave it alone. Don't talk to your wife about it. Take a positive step. So those main three activities.
Wow. And Colin, before we run out of time, I really want to get to what you call mental fitness regarding the X factor. Tell us about the X factor.
Yeah, well, mental fitness is the X factor in positive intelligence. So positive intelligence is really understanding what it takes for us to be able to be in a more positive mindset, to live a positive lifestyle. So mental fitness, developing your mental fitness muscles, literally, look at your mental fitness, whether it's in your heart or in your brain, as a set of muscles that need to be developed. Dr. Heath, on a previous podcast, he mentioned that each year, you run up to 500 miles. So I think you recognize when I say there is no diet, right? I think you know what I mean by that. When we say there is no diet, you know that if January, February, March, you run 50 miles each month, but then in April, you don't run anything. When you go back to running in May, it's going to be much more difficult, and you have to regain that conditioning. So when we say there is no diet, as you know, if you go on a diet for 3 months to lose weight, go back to your regular way of eating, it comes back. So maintain your mental fitness. It's something we do forever. We don't diet. We change our lifestyle habits. In improving your mental fitness, it's the same thing. You never stop building up your mental fitness muscles, because once you do, your saboteurs are going to come right back and get the garden. The weeds are going to come back and get the garden, right? You don't just weed your garden once a month. You do it all summer.
That's excellent. I love that. It really must be like weeding your garden, mowing your lawn. You really has to be a lifestyle. It's not something that you can make a New Year's resolution about in January and forget about in February. Colin, that is such wonderful information. Just as a recap, folks, we've talked about the art of self-awareness and use of positive intelligence, power of programming your brain for success, overcoming hurdles of self-sabotage, so much stuff in today's episode, the X factor in performance improvement. And Colin, before I let you go, we have a couple more things to do. What would you say is your favorite secret performance hack? If you could pick one thing above all others, what would that one thing be?
T-ballers, time to quit your lollygagging. Get out of the dugout, onto the field, and live the art life.
My favorite secret performance hack is belief. B-E-L-I-E-F. And I say belief because before I can do anything, I must believe in it. One of the things that I like to do is, I have these six words, right? Six words. six words that I tell myself over and over and over and over and over again, because I know if I follow these six words with belief, I will succeed. And I often tell people, Dr. Heath, Devin, sir, if I can give you six words that if you followed, there's no way you could fail, how much would that be worth to you?
A lot of money.
Yes.
More than I have in my bank account.
Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So I'm going to give you these six words for free. And literally, I tell myself this stuff at least two times a week. Not everybody, two times a week. So six words that if followed, you cannot fail. Ready?
I am ready.
Ready.
Do not stop until you succeed.
Wow.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm.
Wow. Yes.
I could not have guessed those six words.
That's awesome.
The belief. You have to have the belief to really, really believe that. Do not stop until you succeed.
And I think that's such a wonderful cap to our episode, mm-hmm. except we have one more question that would spring on our guests, and that is from the deep, dark recesses beneath the therapy couch, your very own Dr. Ima Freudnot. He's an Art Lab character. Question for this episode, curated especially for Colin, and I'm going to dig it out from beneath the therapy couch here.
We journey now with Doc Heath as he submerges with our special guest into the depths beneath the dark recesses of the therapy couch.
All right, Colin, here is your question for today. Imagine that you have a dream, or maybe this is a nightmare, about the worst possible coaching client from history. They can be alive or dead. The worst, it could be a famous person, it could be someone that we never heard of. The worst possible coaching client from history that you might have a dream or nightmare about, who would that be? Why would it be that person? And do you think you could really help them?
I had the coaching almost client from HE Double Hockey Sticks about 2 months ago. So this is one.
Was it a few minutes ago? It wasn't Debbie, was it?
That's what I was thinking.
A few months ago, and a coaching colleague of mine asked me to help one of his teaching colleagues who's having a tough time because she went to, this is here in Shanghai, she went to teach that on a Sunday, and she told herself she should not go to school on Sunday. Got to the school, everybody there was put into quarantine for 2 weeks. And she was really pissed off and had a lot of anxiety about that. And I said, okay, let me give her a call, try to have a session with her. And to answer your question, no, I could not help her. Within the first 5 minutes, she told me that I know what I was talking about. She was really very aggressive. And I told him at the end, she needs counseling, therapy, not coaching. So I was able to recognize that. She was very angry and bitter at the situation and really taking it out on me, the coach. So there are times when coaches can't help, but usually that's when coaching is not what the client needs. Usually coaches, if you're trained, you should be able to help the client go through a tough patch. But however, some clients we recognize early need more what I would call the officially trained and certified and you guys.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that brings me to a Doc Heath quote for the day. No other human can overcome your ability to sabotage yourself. No mm-hmm. other human can overcome your ability. If you insist on sabotaging yourself, there's nothing that Colin C. Thompson can do, Debbie, Sarah, Doc Heath can do. And you know what? I'm into it. And what I mean by that is I'm into your free will to sabotage yourself if that's what you choose to do. I would invite you to knock yourself out. I mean, not literally. You'd have to go to the ER. But to go ahead with that, if that's what's working for you. You know, Colin, I often remind new clinicians when they're doing therapy, it's something that we're not taught in grad school, is we need to be aware of what we're asking people to give up to have a healthier life. See, it's the curse of knowledge for us because we're asking, well, why wouldn't you choose a healthier life? I mean, it's a no-brainer. Just use these techniques, these six words, biggie size, improve, make your life more successful. But what we forget is everything we're asking that person to give up because there's a big upside to unhealthy living.
Right.
We have to remember that. Colin, thank you so much for being with us. The parting word goes to you.
Yeah, thank you very much. I just want to add something to that, because you hit something, again, nail on the head. You can only help people who want to be helped. And sometimes people come for coaching because they feel they need somebody to push them. That's not what coaches do. We don't push. So I think, I forgot the term you use, but there are some people who can't get out of their own way. And people say, well, why can't they? It doesn't matter why they can't. That's who they are. People say liars shouldn't lie. Well, liars lie. So, you know. But my point is, you can't change somebody's behavior by saying something like that. People who complain, complainers shouldn't complain. Yes, they should. They are in the complainers category. And also category of people who will not get out of their own way. And for those people, those are ones that's very challenging to help. I didn't say fix, but to help, because they inherently want to get in their own way. So it's very important to recognize that early. So you can help, you can get out of their way also and leave them, or you can try to find different ways to help them. But people should really understand and take people for as they are. And again, as Dr. Heath said, understand what they need to give up to make change, because sometimes what they need to give up isn't worth the change in their minds. And thank you very much for having me on your, I can't call it a, it's more than a podcast. Thank you very much for having me on your couch. Your experience
great. Hey, thank you so much. And thank you, thank T-Baller, for joining us. Catch us in the next episode. Have a great week, everybody. Bye-bye now.
Welcome to On the Couch and Off Our Rocker with Dr. Ima Freudknot, where we review our special guest's Therapy Bites Art Lab episode, Psychomalarkey Scale Assessment Results. That's PMS for short.
Colin Thompson's PMS performance places him in the 94th percentile on the PMS's MES, Mind Expansion Scale. This indicates a capaciously cranial degree of cogitating cognitive augmentation in X-factoring Colin's cortical crevices with a top-notch tendency toward meritorious machinations. Overall, Colin Thompson's PMS psychosillimetric assessment results present a picture of an individual superlatively single-minded in his pursuit of separating students from their own self-induced success-limiting self-sabotage. Mr. Thompson's predisposition is prone to a proclivity of predilection for pointing others to the power of personal mindset programming for purpose-driven performance. This superordinarian soul likely has a promising preternatural prognosis of performative pursuance in the near future, until the propitious prodigiousness of his psyche have been psychomologically analyzed and exorcised. It is my considered conclusion that Coach Colin Thompson be prescribed no less than 307 milligrams IA intraaxonal dose of X-Factoril and a 2300 milligram IL intralobular dose of PRN Poweritol to curtail cavitating cognitions. Dr. Ima Freudknot, Chief Shrinkstigator, Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Grab some of this episode's guest merchandise, specially designed to help keep this episode's message top of mind in your life. Don't forget friends and family members who could use an Art Lab mental boost too. Just go to therapybites.myshopify.com.
Hey, T-Ballers. Thanks so much for being with us today. If we brought value to your day, show us some love by leaving your positive feedback and inviting some friends to listen in and join the T-Ball team. Next time on Therapy Bites Art Lab.
Hey, T-Ballers, here for your twisted pleasure today, the pretzel poo by himself, I just made that up, is Yogi Aaron, who is flipping, you see what I did there, flipping the script on stretching and flexibility while teaching a new yogic approach to mastering your body and to help you live pain-free. Now, wouldn't that be something the pharmaceutical opioid industry would pay big bucks for a hitman to stop? Join us today in the Art Lab as we wiggle our way onto the pathway past chronic pain on the psychology of yogaology. Coming up next.
Government legal gobbledygook. Therapy Bites is not intended as a diagnostic or as an alternative to professional clinical treatment. Resources and advice are for information and entertainment purposes only. Brought to you by someone saying things you don't like? Tape that nagging loudmouth shut. Government-approved speech tape. Gas tape. Now available at your local hardware store. Therapy Bites Art Lab is not an approved, endorsed, authorized, butt-kissing affiliate of the United States Special Offense Assessment Police. SOAP for short. Warning! Consumption of Therapy Bites Art Lab content by Kool-Aid drinking, stinking, thinking, social media, pseudo-psychological pushing, wacky woke, anti-free speech, mumbo-jumbo advocates may cause spontaneous internal skull combustion, stomach discomfort, and or laxative effects. Allergy warning. Therapy Bites is manufactured in a facility that challenges nutty distortions, processes nuggets of accurate, realistic thinking, and life-affirming beliefs. This is the audio version of the legal fine print. Why are you still listening to this when you can catch the next great episode of Therapy Bites Art Lab with a good friend or family member? Really? Are you still there? This is getting silly. Move on to the next psychologically thrilling episode of the best advice on the net. No copay required.
Me eat copay.
Yeah, with Dr. Heath and the T-Ball team. Go ahead, don't be podgoraphobic. Scoot, scoot, scoot. On to the next episode.